money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Deal. Gets open for three. Dagger!
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce all the way up the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Deal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three. What a shot! You talk about a pressure shot.
Hey guys, welcome to the Locked On Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Troy Halliburton. And on the other line today, I have a special guest, the new managing editor of Bullets Forever, Mr. Albert Lee. How are you doing today, Albert?
I'm doing good, Troy. How are you?
I'm doing all right, It's kind of the dog days of Wizards content. So, you know, I feel like we all in the content creation game, you know, we have this point in the lull after NBA free agency and before the NBA schedule will actually break next week to actually, you know, have figure out different things to talk about. So one of the things that I wanted to do was sit back and have an actual conversation about Bradley Beal, the Wizards' best player, and just kind of go over his whole tenure as a Washington Wizard. But first, tell the people a little bit about yourself and some of the new things that you're going to have going on over at Bullets Forever.
Sure. As many of you know, I have been on Bullets Forever since 2014. So I've been on there for quite some time. Some of the things that I would like to start over this fall for the NBA season is we definitely want to have a larger presence in games. We certainly have had some of our writers at games from time to time, but we want to have a more consistent presence than we have in the past. So you'll see a lot more, let's say, videos with some of the players post-game. If you have checked out our site at BulletsForever.com, during the summer, the Mystics are playing, so you've seen a couple of our contributors, Brady Diaz and Diamond Holton, interviewing their players post-game, and you will see more of that this fall as well with the Wizards this season.
I'm excited to see the content creation that you guys can come up with. Grady is a great interviewer. You know, I watch her. She comes down to Wizards games, and you know, she talks to players. I mean, she's really good at the in person interview game. You know, Mike Sykes is, you know, he's all big time now. But when he could come down, he comes down, and you know, he gets into the mix, and he's a staple on Bloggers Row. And I'm excited to get you to come down and get a chance to take in the game atmosphere. And, you know, get a chance to really experience the Bloggers Row, the ups and downs of going through the whole season of actually covering the games live and in person. Trust me, it can get a little depressing in February and March if the team's not winning any games.
I've definitely had a chance to be over with the, you know, with the rest of the media circuit during the NBA Summer League just this past July. I also do intend on coming to a few of the Wizards games myself over at Bloggers Row as well. So no worries on that end. But as you mentioned, I'm really happy to see that, you know, Mike has, he's done really well for our site over the past several years, and now he's over at Axios. And of course, we're really stoked that Grady is on our site. You know, she's in her interviews with with Mystics players right now in the summer, but also some of the Wizards players this past fall. Maybe nothing but top notch. So we're really proud to have her on the site.
Yeah, I'm excited. I look forward to seeing what you guys are able to create.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's dive into this Bradley Beal podcast. So I wanted to first look at how much of the conversation do you remember surrounding when the Wizards jumped up into the lottery that year and grabbed the number three pick, and some of the conversation that was going on around who the team should be taking. I remember there was a large contingent of Wizards fans who were very interested in Harrison Barnes at the time. But the Wizards, I feel like it's safe to say that the Wizards ended up making the right selection by taking Bill with the third pick.
I agree with you there. I like Bradley Beal's his physique as a college freshman. Even one thing that intrigued me as when I saw Bradley Beal in his freshman year at Florida was that, I mean, his physique, he already looked pro-ready. There are a lot of other college players, whether they're freshmen or sophomores. I think Harrison Barnes is a junior at North Carolina when he got drafted. And they clearly still look like they're not fully developed yet. Now, since Brad has entered the NBA, he has continued to, you know, to further develop his body. But coming into the NBA straight up, he was already, at least from a physical standpoint, he was already ready to play. That was one thing that that intrigued me most about him. Second, his shooting form over at Florida, it also looked very, very solid. That was why many Wizards fans wanted to see him in a Washington jersey from day one. It has taken some time, of course, to adjust to the 3-point line. That happens to every NBA draft prospect. But in the long run, I agree with you. The Wizards made the right decision to pick at number
six. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that when you talk about Bradley Beal's shooting form, I think that that was probably one of the biggest indicators of the potential that he could have in the NBA. And I think that I think a lot of people got too caught up into his shooting percentages when he was at Florida. And you know, I think that could be more attributed to the fact that, you know, he was the star of that team, and you know, he probably took a lot of shots that, you know, that probably weren't great quality looks. But you know, when you're mm-hmm. the star of the team, you're able to come out there and kind of have the free reign to, you know, take whatever it is shot that you want, whether that be good shots or bad shots. But mm-hmm. when you talk about the form of his jump shot, I think that, you know, anybody who is a natural talent evaluator knows that. I mean, he has, you know, just an almost picture perfect shooting form, and I think that the comparisons that he was drawn back then was to Ray Allen. And so, just as you said, I feel like over time, maybe when he got to the NBA, it took him a little while to kind of adjust to the NBA 3-point line. But I think that now it's safe to say that, you know, Bradley Beal is probably one of the better shooters in the NBA right now.
Yes, I agree. I believe this last season he was shooting at a career low percentage-wise from 3-point line, but I attribute that to the fact that every team defense is going to focus on Beal. They're going to defend him more closely when he takes the 3-point shot. And of course, Beal's taking more shots than he otherwise has over the first few years when he was, sharing that backcourt with John Wall as that primary ball handler in sport.
Yeah, so, and then when we talk about Bradley's first couple of years when he was in the league, I think that a lot of the conversation has to be started with his kind of injury-riddled first couple of seasons. And some of that deals with the stress fractures or stress reactions in his legs. And I think that one of the things that was very poignant to me over the last couple of years, how they Wizards talked about that Bradley Beal actually was still kind of growing, and that, you know, I know that his draft height was listed at 6'5", but I'm going to say that he was probably closer to a little bit of 6'3", when he was first drafted, but as he's kind of matriculated through his career, I feel like he has grown into a player who's a legit 6'5" now, and that a part of that the stress fractures in his leg came from, you know, a guy who's, you know, technically still going through the rest of his puberty process. So, but now that he's like fully into his grown man body, we've seen that he's been able to withhold the rigor of a full NBA season with him having played 82 games both of the last two seasons, and he actually played the most minutes of any player in the NBA last season. What can you talk about with Bill and the early, like the stress fractures in his leg and the conversations kind of around the injury riddle first couple of seasons?
To me, I kind of view it as from this perspective. There's a lot, the way the NBA is today, a lot of the new stars in those early draft picks, they're coming in as 19-year-old, 20-year-old, 20-year-old people. So they're not necessarily fully developed in the process, as you mentioned, from a physical standpoint. Even though Beal's body looked like it was already pro-ready, and it was, I mean, he was still growing and filling into his frame. And the other thing is that there's a difference between the way the number of games that the college team is going to play versus the NBA. As you mentioned, the NBA, there's 82 regular season games. You probably have another 5 or 6 preseason games on top of that. You have summer league as soon as these players are drafted. So that's easily from the time a player gets drafted in June until the end of the regular season in April. This, you know, someone like Bia, let's say he never had these stress reactions. He's played 82 regular season games. You add another 5 summer league games, that's 87. And of course, you're adding on the preseason games plus the practice. So it's definitely an adjustment between the way an NCAA player is going to handle his schedule and the way an NBA player is. And to me, those stress reactions, I know we don't give too much credit to the Wizards medical staff in the past because they've underestimated the time frame for players to recover from injury. But when it came to Bradley Beal, they have made the right call to sit him out in those early seasons. Because when they found stress reactions, they just sat him out. They didn't want to just let him keep playing lightly or something and then see that stress reaction turn to a fracture and then, you know, perhaps Beal wouldn't be where he is right now.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I definitely think that, the Wizards medical staff has gotten a lot of heat over the past years, and some of that may be deserved. But I do believe that the way they handled Brad in his early years was very conducive to, you know, looking for the long-term view and making sure that they were building up a player that they were going to be able to have for, you know, close to up to a decade at this point. So when we're talking about Brad in those early years, we've talked about his body and his and him playing more games and getting adjusted to the NBA schedule. But let's talk about some of the things that he was able to do on the court in those early years, and how Brad, I'm sitting here, I have this basketball reference page up right now, and you look at the 2013 or 2014 or 2015 seasons. You know, where Brad, he was doing okay. He's averaging, 13 and 15 or 17 points respectively in those seasons. But also, the Wizards, they ended up, making some trades and bringing in Gortat and bringing in Nene, and combined with John Wall, that the team was going on some playoff runs. And Brad, really kind of showed that he was, as Dickie V would say, a PT Peter. He would step up in those playoffs and, he averaged no less than 19 points a game in all of his years in playoff performances. What did you think about the way that Brad was able to, kind of adjust his game from, a player who was, not so much as timid during the regular season, but he was fitting in with John Wall. But during the playoffs, you could clearly see the potential of a guy who was a scoring maven.
I view it in, I can see it a number of ways. But here's the way I would, how I would normally view Beal's playoff performance. I think whenever any team makes the playoffs, players, they definitely step up, and Beal certainly did during those first two playoff runs back in 2014 and 2015 when they made the second round. And the other thing is, when a player is a rookie, at the time, I mean, people were focusing more on John Wall, they were focusing more on Marcin Gortat, or focusing more on Nene. So initially, maybe Beal was making more of those points because, hey, he was just wide open. You had to pick your poison in the playoffs. But as time went on, these big performances in the playoffs helped mature a player that much more. So even though Beal had some of these stress injuries in his first couple of years, fortunately, they never happened to a point where he had to miss playoff games for them. So it's sort of a blessing in disguise in that sense, because now he's able to, he played fewer games in those early seasons, but they also helped him show his potential in the playoffs. My favorite moment of Beal as a rookie in the playoffs, this is his rookie season, in 2014 against Indiana. I think it was game 6. The Wizards ultimately lost that game and the series to them. But Beal did make he just dribbled down the court, kick a 3 from the baseline, and it went in. The Wizards were leading by 1. I mean, that was like the peak moment of the Wizards that season. When that shot went in, people were like, yes, we have a chance to win this game. We're going to go push this to game 7. I think playoff mode Beal, he is the guy. I mean, he had about as much confidence as anybody out there. And when he gets going, especially during the playoffs, the Wizards, they could beat anybody any game. That's just how I view Beal in the playoffs during that time and even now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that one of the things, I do like how you talked about, I think that his role adjusted. So from those early playoff runs where a lot of times defenses would be focused on trying to stop Nene and trying to stop Wall. And, Beal, he was able to take advantage of his individual matchup. I think that, it kind of gets forgotten. That he went up against some quality shooting guards in those first couple of playoff runs. They played the Bulls in that first playoff series, and he kind of outplayed Jimmy Butler a little bit in that series. I remember in that mm-hmm. same Indiana series that you're speaking of, Lance Stephenson was the starting shooting guard, and I remember Beal was giving Lance Stephenson so much fit that they had to switch Paul George on some, and Paul George is one of the best defenders in the NBA. So he did make it a little bit more difficult for Beal, and I believe that was probably ultimately why the Wizards wound up not winning that series. But I think that the seeds were being planted early as far as the things that Beal can do as far as winning his individual matchups in those first playoff runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. And so when we talk about Beal coming off of those, the Wizards, they were coming off of those playoff runs. Everything was, looking up. The trajectory of the team was an arrow that was clearly pointed up. And in the summer of 2016, the Wizards decided to offer Beal his current contract, his 5-year max contract. What do you remember about the conversations that were taking place around the Wizards offering Beal his first initial max contract? And do you think that Beal has lived up to that contract so far?
From back in 2016, I think I remember most fans are in, or even most reports back then, they were just anticipating that Beal would just get a max 5-year extension, he'd sign it, and it's a done deal. Especially for players who are drafted in the top 3, they're putting up decent production, they're going to get that max extension. And that player is going to sign that sophomore deal with their team, and that's just how it is in the NBA. And I mean, there are definitely some people who said, "Oh, the Wizards should offer a shorter contract, offer a little less money." That may be because of some of the past injuries to match contracts that came out in the past, like Gilbert Arenas in 2008, or even, you know, what we're dealing with John Wall right now with the Supermax. But with Beal, I think basically everyone and their mother knew he was getting the max contract, he's signing it, and has he lived up to it? Yes, he has. He has definitely lived up to his max contract thus far. The Wizards' wins aren't there, but one player can only do so much.
Exactly, one player can only do so much, and you know they pay him to come out here and perform. And I believe that he has come out here and performed. And you know, and the duration of his first max contract extension, you know, Bill has made his first two All-Star appearances. I believe it should have been three All-Star appearances, but we won't get started into Adam Silver appointing Carmelo Anthony to the All-Star team in the 2017 season. But you know, but Bill has pretty much he's earned his two All-Star berths. And, you know, I think one of the things when we look at the reason why he probably didn't receive a lot of recognition early on for the All-Stars is because for some reason I don't think that casual NBA fans are really too familiar with Bradley Beal. It's like they know who he is, but he doesn't – every year when we look at the All-Star voting, you know, we're always like, Derrick Rose? How does Derrick Rose have more votes than Bradley Beal? He's not even playing. It's like, you know, we look at the voting totals, and what do you think it is that has kind of hindered Bradley Beal from being one of the more popular players in the NBA, despite him, you know, he's a great guy. He's actually, you know, quite charming. He speaks well, and he can play on the court. Why do you think that he hasn't really grown to the level of popularity of some of the other stars around the NBA?
It's a combination of things. The first is, you know, are you the number one pick in the draft or not? Beal wasn't the number one pick in 2012. That's one part of it. The next part is, are you going to a team that ultimately gets a lot more success because you are the primary catalyst of that success? In Beal's case, the Wizards, they made the playoffs in his second season, I believe. But he still was not viewed as the primary linchpin behind the Wizards' early playoff appearances. He was always viewed as, John Wall's sidekick, as opposed to, Beal is the guy who led us to the playoffs. So those are like the basketball reasons. Beyond that, I'd say, you know, with players like Derrick Rose or Kyrie Irving, I mean, they have notable national endorsements out there. And you don't see Beal with, you know, on national Nike commercials. You don't see Beal, on those national State Farm commercials with Chris Paul and James Harden. And it's that type of national marketing presence that Beal doesn't have yet. Unfortunately, the thing is, a lot of these seeds are planted as soon as a rookie gets into the NBA, and Beal didn't have that quite to the extent that some of these other players whom you're mentioning have. Like someone like a Kyrie Irving, for example. I mean, he was getting a lot of marketing attention from the day he entered the NBA. And even John Wall initially got a lot of that as well, especially from Reebok. I remember he had like his own shoe and so forth. So it's a combination of are you the top guy for your team when you get to the playoffs from a lottery position? Beal, I'll say he wasn't in those first couple seasons. And then the second part is, did he get a lot of national marketing buzz early on? He didn't get either of them. And I think that's what has dampened his popularity among the casual NBA outside of Houston.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel as though Beal definitely has not had the national marketing that the players that you described, like a Kyrie Irving, has had. one of the biggest things that Kyrie Irving has is that you know, signature shoe deal with Nike. And, you know, the Kyrie Irvings are some of the more popular basketball shoes amongst young hoopers, you know, playing all around the country today. And, you know, Bradley Beal doesn't have his own signature shoe, even though he is signed as a Nike athlete. But I want to touch on one of the other points that you made about the fact that, you know, Bill really wasn't the star of the team, that, you know, he was kind of, you know, the Robin to John Wall's Batman. And I want to, this is a perfect segue into the point, how much of that Bill being, you know, playing a secondary role to Wall, how much of that do you think kind of had a bit to do with, you know, the conversation surrounding the perceived rift between he and John Wall? Because, you know, I think that the way that sort of national media, they come in and try to portray it that, you know, Wall and Bill never really got along. And I think a lot of that has been a little overblown. But what do you, from your perspective, what do you think about the relationship between Wall and Bill? Do you think that some of those conversations were overblown? Do you think that, that Wall and Bill can work together in the future?
I'll say when it came to that, I thought it was a bit overblown. I think people will start, you know, people who aren't necessarily close to the Wizards, you know, they may see, oh, okay, John Wall, Bradley Beal, they're not BFFs, they're not like hanging out at each other's homes and all that other stuff. And, you know, there's other, you know, teammate tandems where, you know, the point guard and the shooting guard are best friends and all that stuff. So when it comes to, you know, that type of, you know, I'm not sure if Bradley Beal and John Wall are, you know, the best of friends off the court and that type of thing. Are they like best friends for life, that type of feeling? But when it comes to like the way they play together on the court, I believe that early on, when you are a rookie like Beal, you don't just, I mean, you want to assert yourself, but you don't necessarily want to make yourself seem like the franchise savior from day one. I don't think even John Wall was like that in his initial months with the Wizards. So I think from that perspective, Beal has, you know, Beal kept a low profile. He just, you know, let the game come to him as opposed to him trying to force things. And I think that's worked out to his benefit. Now, over the last couple of years, I think some of that dynamic between that Wall and Beal backcourt has changed. I mean, Beal's turned out to become, you know, better and better each and every year. He's become a more complete guard as opposed to someone you just pass the ball to for corner three. That's what Beal did very well in the beginning. He still does that well today. It's just that Beal's a better ball handler than he was in the past. And he can make his, and he can play some point guard too if he really needed him. So going forward to the last part of your question, do I think John Wall and Bradley Beal have to, they have to kind of adjust their relationship on the court, that is? The answer is yes. I mean, Wall does have that Achilles injury. It is going to affect his game significantly whenever he gets back in the court. But that's, you know, that's completely not, that's a different podcast for another day. let's assume that John Wall becomes a better spot-up shooter, sort of like Jason Kidd had during the latter years of his career. Beal is going to end up being more of a primary ball handling guard than he was before. So going forward, do I think can the two coexist? Yes. Can they, and is Beal going to end up being more of that Batman and John Wall's Robin? This will be the hot take, but I'm going to have to say yes. I admit it. Yes, because right now Beal is continuing to improve. He's entering the prime of his career. John Wall, he's coming back from a major injury, and he has to get his feet wet again. And then we'll see, you know, where he is at that point.
Yeah, I don't even think that's a hot take. I mean, you know, this is just kind of the reality of the situation here. You know, I think that the Wizards would be, it would behoove them to, you know, treat Bradley Beal as the franchise player moving forward. And so whereas Beal kind of acquiesced to Wall in those early years, I believe that, you know, it's time for the roles to be reversed. And, you know, Wall will probably have to acquiesce to, you know, some of the things that Brad can do on the court, and he'll have to, you know, kind of get in where he fits in around things, the things that Brad does very well. And one of the reasons why Bill was able to kind of take over the reins of the franchise, as we mentioned, is because Wall has been injured the last couple of seasons, and it wasn't just the Achilles injury from last year. You know, he had knee surgery from the season before that. And, you know, that led us into the everybody eats Wizards when, you know, the numbers for the team started going up. The advanced analytics would say that, you know, the Wizards were playing better and the ball was being distributed more. And when John was out at the end of the 2018 season, what did you think about, you know, Bill's everybody eats comment? And, you know, do you think that, you know, some of the media may have blown it out of proportion when, you know, he was really just kind of, you know, taking over it. He was finding his way as a leader on and off the court of the team. And it was never really a shot at Wall, but it was just more so about, you know, getting everybody else, the people who were there on the court, getting them involved.
I'd say with that situation, I don't think Beal was intending to, you know, ruffle feathers with Wall. It was just, I think it's just saying things how they were at that time. At that point, you know, you had to get the ball moving to more people. You're going to have more of an advantage against other, the Wizards have a bigger advantage against other teams, and they're passing the ball and you just don't know who's going to shoot. That's why everybody worked out very well, especially in those first 5-10 games. Eventually, yes, people found the, you know, the weaknesses of individual players in the lineup, but that happens all the time. You just have to find the strategy that works for your team, you know, to keep yourself in playoff position. And at the time, everybody was the right thing to do. And the way everybody eats was in general, you know, with this positionless basketball era that we're in, and also this more pass happy basketball era that we're in now. Bradley Beal fits into a wide variety of systems. I mean, he can be that spot up shooter if there's a, you know, ball dominant point guard like John Wall, who will orchestrate the offense in the way that he did early in his career. But Beal can also initiate the offense on his own and get the ball moving to more players with another point guard like Tomas Satoransky when he was on the team. So it just shows the versatility that Beal has as opposed to everybody eats, meaning, oh, Bradley Beal trying to throw a shade of ball. I don't think he meant that.
Right, and I believe that the versatility that Brad has shown over the last 2 years, you know, through the Everybody Eats era and then even coming into this season, you know, Brad has had to take on more responsibility as a ball handler and not only a shot maker for himself, but a shot creator for his teammates. And so I think that the growth that he's shown in his game is the difference that has taken him from, you know, a player who was an all-star level player to a fringe all-NBA caliber player. And what did you think of Bill from last season and him, you know, just barely missing out on the all-NBA? And, I mean, as quiet as it's kept, you know, I know that there are a lot of people around the Wizards organization that breathe a sigh of relief, because it would have been a whole world of issues to have to deal with if Bill would have made all-NBA and would have been eligible for that Supermax contract. Let's talk about, let's layer this into two different parts. So let's talk about Bill, the growth of his game, where he is making himself, he's turning himself into an all-NBA player. And then let's talk about him, that Supermax contract, and with him possibly turning down this contract extension that the Wizards offered him last week, and the potential of him possibly making All-NBA this year, and if he would be worth a Supermax contract in the future if he were to make an All-NBA team.
I'd say, did Beal deserve to make the All-NBA team last year? You know, that battle ultimately came down to him and Kemba Walker, and Walker won it. I believe the Charlotte Hornets performed a little better than the Wizards, so if that was the deciding factor, I'm not going to complain too much about that. From a statistical standpoint, do I think Beal is, you know, at that fringe All-NBA level? Yes, I think he's certainly there. As for like the current contract extension, it was like 3 years, $111 million, if I'm not mistaken. If Beal were offered, you know, should Beal take it? If I were him, I would go ahead and just sit on it, because if he doesn't make the All-NBA team this season, which is meaning 2019-20, he's probably going to get offered a similar extension, barring something crazy. So in that case, you know, I don't see any pain with him, you know, just holding out for another season. Will Beal make the All-NBA team next year? I think when it comes to making an All-NBA team, these kind of awards tend to go to players on teams who at least make the NBA playoffs. I think it's going to be difficult for Beal to make an All-NBA team unless, you know, he is among the NBA's top scorers and assisters, and the Wizards also have to, you know, they're going to have to be really close to making the playoffs. I think the Vegas odds have them at like 27, 28 wins for this season. So the Wizards are going to have to win closer to 40 games, and Beal's going to have to produce around the same level of what he's producing at. If he can do all of those things, then perhaps he may sneak in, just depending on how other guards in the NBA do. But I think it's going to be difficult for him to make an All-NBA team, because a lot of that's going to depend on how well the Wizards do with the team. And you know, unless your name is LeBron James, and even LeBron, his luck kind of ran out last year with it, you know, just adding one player is not going to turn a team from a lottery team to, you know, an NBA final contender. That very rarely happens.
Yeah, I 100% agree. When we talk about, you know, looking at the way the NBA, the voting landscape, you know, team success plays a large part in, you know, how these media members vote. And, you know, if the Wizards aren't going to come out and win a lot of games next year, then, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, that will hinder Bradley Beal from making an All-NBA team next year. And so if Brad doesn't come out and make All-NBA, then the Wizards will, you know, still be within a decision to make, because, you know, it's fine for them to offer him that 3-year, $111 million contract extension right now for him to turn it down, but because he has 2 years left on his deal. So, you know, there's no need to kind of go into panic mode just yet. But, you know, if we fast forward and then we deal with next summer and they offer him the same extension again, or, it'll actually be more money next summer because the cap will go up, which is also another reason why it's smarter for him to wait it out. But if he, let's say he doesn't take the contract extension even next summer, at that point, do you think that it should be time for the Wizards and their fans to go into panic mode as far as what the next step will be as far as Bradley Beal's future?
If they can't, let's say they can't get an extension with Beal next year, and let's just assume the Wizards win somewhere between 25 to 30 games, that's the general consensus according to Vegas. We'll talk about NBA season previews in depth next month. So if the Wizards are, you know, that 25 to 30 win team, he's probably not making All-NBA. Wizards offer him, you know, let's say 3-year, $115-120 million extension, whatever the rules allow, and Beal doesn't accept that deal, I do think they're going to have to start entertaining offers to trade him to other teams. You don't want a situation where you draft a player who turns into a multi-time All-Star. There's a good chance he'll be a 3-time All-Star after the 2019-20 season. And then you see him go for basically nothing. The Wizards, I mean, they more or less, well, let's just say a couple of it is, they are rebuilding at this point. They are going to rebuild around Beal for the time being. And if you know that Beal does not want to be part of this process over the long term, you're going to have to find more draft picks to replace him, things like that, to keep the franchise moving forward. And you can't be too emotional about things like that. I think Beal seems to be one of the good guys in the NBA. Everybody likes to root for him once you get to know his story and how he's raised. And when you check his social media accounts, it's always like, you know, I'm just really thankful that I'm here another day. So he doesn't take things for granted. At the same time, you don't want to be one of, as they say in the NBA, you know, everything is a business decision. The Wizards, they have to think about what's best for a franchise over the long term and not fall. It can't be too emotionally involved in, you know, just keeping Beal just because he's a good guy. Because that's going to hold them back from, you know, competing for more playoff appearances, you know, in the not too distant future.
Well, I think that this is where I think one of the advantages of having a new general manager in place. So whereas I feel like Tommy Shepard is probably a lot more capable of kind of managing this situation than Ernie Grunfeld would have been. And I believe that Tommy Shepard will have a good read on the situation. And I think that from all indication that, you know, for them to have to trade Bradley Beal is probably the absolute worst-case scenario for what the Wizards would want to do. And so, you know, I think that whatever Tommy Shepard has to do to sell Bradley Beal on staying as a Wizard, I think that, you know, he is going to do that. But, you know, this is also a business. And, you know, if it comes to a point where, you know, he's staring at either, you know, we lose Bradley Beal for nothing or try to get something for him, I believe that, you know, Tommy Shepard will probably have to pull the trigger. But I think that when we talk about potential Bradley Beal deals, I think that this is a conversation that is very premature to have right now. And I feel like it's a bridge that the Wizards will have to cross once they get there.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that, you know, for right now, I think that the only thing that we can do as Wizards fans and content creators and people who observe the team is to kind of just allow for this all to play out. And so, you know, I feel like this is a season, not necessarily like a free season or a season where they're punting away, but, I mean, this is an opportunity to see, you know, experiment with different things, different lineups with, you know, Beal surrounded by different shooters like C.J. Miles and Davis Bertans and, you know, different stuff. Allow, see if Beal can, you know, shoulder more of a load like a James Harden where he can score more and, you know, get his assists up and get his teammates involved. I think the biggest thing when we talk about Bradley Beal right now is just the excitement that Wizards fans should have of seeing where he can go and how much of his potential that he'll actually be able to reach next season. How excited are you to, you know, kind of watch Beal and see where his game can take him?
I think it's, you know, the good part about this season compared to last couple is, you know, like Bradley can come into the season knowing that he is the guy. Since we already talked about the dynamic between Wall and Beal, and whether that perceived rift really means anything. But this is probably the first year where Beal knows for sure, okay, I have to be done. Though this is a rebuilding season, a rebuilding season doesn't mean that a team has to win 15, 20 games and just languish and hope they get the number one pick. Rebuilding is what you make out of it. The Wizards can they put in a lot of talent around him, mostly younger talent, like they drafted Rui Hachimura, who should help shoulder the low post. They've re-signed Thomas Bryant, who did very well for them last season. They've added a couple new point guards. They've added Isaiah Thomas, who's going to be an all-star if he hits his 2017 form. And of course, they added Ish Smith as well. I mean, the thing is, you just have to let all these elements play out, and then see where the road takes you next year. The Wizards, they still have one of their key pieces, and because you still have the Reese Beal, you can't just say, okay, we're just gonna tank and hope we get next year's number one pick. A rebuild, in my eyes, is more like, okay, we know we have to start fresh, but we brought in a lot of new talent. We already have some of our top talent already here. Let's see how it works, and then we'll go from there. And hey, if the Wizards are as bad as all the preseason projections say, then yeah. Okay, they're going to be picking in the top five, top six next year. That's the reason why the NBA draft lottery is what it is. But if the Wizards perform better than we expect, then this team can go in more directions than we initially thought at this time.
So you're saying there's a chance?
I don't want to say there is a chance just yet. It's just way too early. I still think the Wizards they're not going to make the playoffs next year. But having said that, could this team push for 40 wins? I mean, could they push past 35, get toward 40 this season? If they do, then that could entice more players, more players and free agents to want to come here. Since you will have Jan Mahimi's contract coming off the books after 2019-20. That's when a salary cap rebuild would start, really taking effect. Right now, we can't really, this season, there's not too much they can do because you still have Beal's contract. You still have, Wall Supermax is just kicking it. And, Mahimi, he's probably not going to be stretched or let go. He seems like a good guy in the locker room otherwise. So from that standpoint, I don't think they really have to let it go from that standpoint, but that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, having Jan Mahimi, that could either be a short 3-minute podcast in the future, or it could be a 4-hour-long podcast trying to figure out who decides to give him a 4-year, $64 million contract. But as you said, Jan Mahimi's contract will be coming off the books eventually. And, if there is a sense of optimism around the fact that, if the Wizards, they don't have to necessarily make the playoffs, like you say, they can come out and, play better than the Vegas predicted, 27.5 wins, if they can get closer to 40 wins. I think that will lead the franchise with a lot of optimism and what they can do going forward. But either way, I'm excited to see what the team can do, and I believe that they can outperform the very low expectations that people seem to have for the team. But I think that there's beauty in the journey, and I'm excited to be a part of that journey next year. And I'm excited to have you coming on and coming down to the arena more often, and just get a chance to get a vibe and see what it is that you can bring to the table in the locker room and going in and answer these questions. It's an exciting time for Wizards basketball and Wizards content creation. Albert, man, I want to thank you for taking the time out and coming on this podcast to chop it up about Bradley Beal. And I also want to give you this opportunity to you know, plug some more of your work and let the people know where they can find you on social media and where they can find your work.
Sure. I am at AlienTheDMV on Twitter, so you can so feel free to follow me there. Mostly, it's just going to be a running Twitter feed of the content I write on Bolts Forever, but I certainly do retweet and, you know, post other thoughts as well. You can check out bulletsforever.com and follow us on Twitter at bulletsforever, and also follow our Facebook page as well. And of course, Bulletz Forever wasn't the first SB Nation site I wrote on. I first wrote on Swish Appeal, which is SB Nation's WNBA site. I am still a contributor there, so feel free to follow Swish Appeal as well for general WNBA content as well.
Yeah, I think that, and you're definitely one of the leading voices in WNBA content, and I'll have to get you back on at some point during the summer to you know, talk Washington Mystics basketball.
Yes, and definitely the Mystics, they're second place in the WNBA standings, and this is probably their best shot at winning the title. After making the final last year, there's really only one more hump for them to get past, and that's just winning it all. I don't really, besides the Phoenix Mercury, I think they are probably going to be favored against almost anyone else in a 5-game series if they make the finals again this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Deladon, we trust. I believe that the Mystics have a more than valid shot of winning the WNBA title. And, you know, I'm just as excited to see, if they're able to get the monumental basketball era off to a winning start. So, again, Albert, I want to thank you for coming on, man. Yeah, this was great. I look forward to working alongside you in the future. And again, I'm just excited for, you know, the things that the Mystics and the Wizards are going to be able to do.
All right, same here. Well, thanks so much for having me on.
All right, no problem, man. No problem, man. Take it easy, man. Enjoy the rest of your summer, all right?
All right, thanks. You too.
Yep.
Bye-bye.